And we're holding on Lamed Vav Amud Bey's second line from the bottom. We started talking yesterday about the Takana of Prusbul, that a way of preventing debts from being canceled by Shemitah, and we discussed why Hillel made that Takana, because there were people who were avoiding lending money because they were afraid it was going to get canceled by Shemitah, and the Torah specifically warns not to do that. So to prevent them from doing that, he made this Takana, and we discussed the mechanism by which it works. How is he able to override a din of the Torah? So now, continuing on that, the Gemara says, my Prusbul. What is the Loshon of Prusbul? Where does that word come from? Omer of Chista Prus Buli Ubuti. So Rav Chista said it stands for Prus, which means a Takana, a Buli, for the rich, Ubuti, and for the poor. So it benefits the rich in that they have, now they have a way of collecting their debt. And another point that this way they're not being, or another point of the Baruch Nura on the Mishnah says this way they're not being over on mitzvah in the Torah. That's a benefit, that itself is a benefit for them. And number two, and it's a benefit for the poor because now they'll find people who are willing to lend them money. Nobody's going to say, well, I don't want to lend you money because it's almost Shemitah. Where do we see that the word bully and buti means poor and means rich and poor respectively? So bully elo ashirim. The word bully refers to the rich people. V'chtiv shavarti es ga'on uzchem. The pasuk says in the Teichata, Hashem says, I'll break the haughtiness of your strength. The Tony Rabbi Yosef elo bulois shib Yehuda. So Rabbi Yosef says that refers to the bulois among the in Yehuda, the rich people, where they're going to cease to exist at the time of the Churban. They're going to lose their wealth or be killed or whatever it is. The word itself, actually, there's a Greek word, very similar Greek word, bule, that means something like the city council or the national or the town or whatever, the council of people who run the government or whatever, but pashtos, that's related because usually rich people are involved in that. Anyway, so therefore, bully means the rich. Buti, Elohanim, and the word buti refers to the poor. Dichtiv tavitenu, as we find that Hashem says, make sure that you're willing to lend him money rather than thinking it's almost Shemitah and I can't. And so the word havet and tavitenu, the shirdish is ayin vez tes, and therefore we get from that the word buti, which means poor people. So therefore, so Prusbul, Rechista is saying, is a takona for the poor, as a takona for the rich and for the poor. So really, in other words, the full name of it would be, according to Rav Chista, would be Prusbul Bully Buti or something like that, and it eventually got shortened to Prusbul. Another derivation, Omale Rava Lauza. Rava asked somebody who was speaking in a foreign language that this person used the word Prusbul in a sentence where Rava realized that it wasn't directly related to Prusbul as in what we're talking about. So he asked him, my Prusbul. So in your language, what is this word Prusbul that you just used in your conversation? What does it mean? Omalei Pursa de Milsa. So he tells him it's a takona for the matter. It's a, in his language, Greek or Latin or whatever language it was from, it meant the word, so different derivation of the word Prusbul. It doesn't specifically mean bully as in rich people. And then the rest of the derivation that Rav Chista said, the word Prusbul all by itself means a takona. So therefore, in other words, the idea would be, probably originally it was called the Takana regarding loans during Shemitah or something to that effect. And over time, it got worn down to and people just started calling it the Takana. Okay. More dinim about the Prusbul. Amr of Yehuda, Amr Shmuel, Yisraimen ain't Srichen Prusbul. Orphans, I'm talking about Ketanim, don't require Prusbul. So we mean, in other words, that So they themselves have lent out money to people. The Rashba points out we wouldn't have to say that it means that their father lent out money and now they want to collect the debt. There is in fact a different source in Sifri or something that says that in that case then the Ritva actually says this that if they yaushin the debt from their father, then anyway Sifri says that the debt is not canceled anyway, that you don't even need a Prusbul, because midaraisa, that debt wouldn't be canceled based on a derivation from the pasuk. So rather, we mean the Yesomim themselves, or their apotropsim, I guess, or whatever, lent out money on their behalf. So then they don't require a prosbul. And the reason is, v'chein toni Rami Bachama, Yesomim and Tzrichim prosbul. Rami Bachama taught a braisa that says the same thing. The reason is that Rami Gamliel, based in Avi and Shari Yesomim, because Rami Gamliel and his based in are the fathers of orphans, not just Rami Gamliel. It just happens that this braisa was composed in the time of Rami Gamliel, but it means the Nasi of each generation and his based in, they're like the fathers of the Yesomim, meaning even if the Yesomim have, and usually they do, they have guardians or trustees, apotropsim. We're going to talk about those in detail further on in the Masechta. So even if they have them, nevertheless, the Beis Din still is responsible to supervise those apotropsim as if they were the orphan's own fathers. So in effect, the debt is already in the hands of Beis Din to collect. And given that the whole idea of Prusbul is to give over the debt to Beis Din, then it's not necessary to do that. It's considered already as if it's under the control of Beis Din. By the way, as far as the previous piece of Shavarti as Goyin Uzchem and the derivation of Prusbul from Prusbul the Rabuti, it's not just that it was worn down from use over time. Marsha explains that the primary takana was for the rich person. Therefore, it was mainly called after his name. Therefore, it's mainly called Prusbul rather than Prusbut. And another point, when it says this for Shavarti as Goyin Uzchem, the rich people are going to be gone, means actually that just the opposite. They were not wanting to let the debts be canceled by Shemitah. So therefore, in the Torah, Hashem is warning that such people are going to disappear if they act like that. All right, anyway, getting back to the Gemara. So we see, Rabbi Huda and Rami Bachama are saying that the Beis Din is considered the father of the Yesomim, and therefore you don't have to worry about a prosbul. Okay. More dinim about a prosbul. Tnan Hossam. We learn in another Mishnah in Masech the Shavias. Again, that last paragraph of Shavias talks about the dinim of Shemitah Ksofim and the matter of prosbul and all that. So, Ein Kosvin prosbul El Ala Karka. You write a prusbul only based on land. So only if the loiva has land, only then can you write a prusbul. Now, why is that? So Rashi gives a reason that most of the time when a person lends money, it's usually, he'll only do it if the person has land to serve as security for the loan. So therefore, as usual, the Chachamim make their takanas only regarding the more usual cases. So that being the case, only if he has land will the takana be in effect. If not, then not. So even if the land that the loiva owns is not worth the full amount of the loan, that's fine because we actually had this a few blocks ago, and primarily it's in Ksubis, even if he has only a tiny bit of land, fine. The malva in principle can, when it comes time to get the debt paid back, he'll take that piece of land in satisfaction of the debt. The loiva will come and buy it back from him. Then he can go and take it for the next part of the debt, and so on and so forth, as many times as necessary until the debt is paid off. So even a tiny little bit of land can be the security, can be the vehicle for repayment for a large loan. That's a point of reduction. Tosfos gives a different explanation. Tosfos explains that another reason why Dafke has to have land, or related to that, is because the land in particular, the person can't hide. Metalklin, the loiva can always hide and claim that he doesn't have them anymore. Karka, you can't do that. Now, the Gemara is seemingly going to talk about a flower pot. And obviously that you could hide, but Tosfos says fine. Once the Chachamim made a takana that you need land for the purpose, then anything that's considered land in halacha and a flower pot with a hole, as we're going to talk about soon, is considered that. Then that would still be considered land for this purpose. There is another point that some other Rishonim make. It's a different reason. The reason is because when there's land, when the loiva has land, it can be considered in a certain sense as though the loan was already paid off. because since the land is available, related to that, since the land is available at any time to take, then therefore, in effect, it can be considered as though it already exists, as though it's already been paid off. So therefore, it's not totally undoing what it says in the Torah, the concept of canceling loans during Shemitah. So therefore, that would be another reason why the Chachamim made that Takana, why the Chachamim made the Takana that way. Anyway, the Mishnah goes on to say, im ein loy, that suppose the loiva does not have any land, then the malva can be mizakeh him even a tiny amount of space in his field, and then it works because now he has land for that purpose. Showed him point out one second. If the loiva wants to accept it, fine. But what if he doesn't want to accept it? Are you going to tell me is this going to be a thing of zochin la'adam shalom b'fonim? It's not zochin. You're doing it in order to be able to collect the debt from him later, so it would be a choyv. So there's different points that Rishonim make. First of all, you could say that maybe the Rosh says you're right. This is a special takana by Prusval that we're going to allow such a thing to happen. And the Ran gives a different explanation. Look, of course, right now it's a chayv for him because now he's going to have to pay back his debt. But it indirectly, they'll come out of schus from it later because now people in the future will be willing to lend him money. So that's the Mishnah. So now b'kama kol shehu. So now how much is considered kol shehu? Even if it's only the space where you could plant one stalk of cabbage, that's considered enough karka that you can use that as a basis for writing the principle. And more on that, Omer of Yehuda, afilu hishiloi mokum l'tanu l'kirayim, even if the malva lent the loiva, or somebody else lent the loiva, whatever, a place in his chotzer to place an oven or a stove, kos v'nola pruzbol, that piece of land is now enough of a basis to write a pruzbol on the basis of it, even though it's only borrowed. Because nevertheless, right now he has a tiny bit of land. And in effect, that land in principle could now be requisitioned from him if it's needed to pay off the debt. So therefore, it could be considered a basis for the principle. So the Gemara asks, Eini, is that so? But Hatoni Hillel, didn't Hillel teach a Braisa? This is not Hillel the Tana who first made the concept of principle. This is the later Amoda of the same name, was mentioned here and there in Shas. Anyway, he taught a Braisa, Ein Kosvin Prusbel, El Al Otit Nokov Vilvan. So Hillel's Braisa says you can write a principle only on the basis of a flower pot with a hole, implying Nokov Ein Shain and Nokov Loi, only if it has a hole, because as we learned earlier, on Dachok Beis, when we had the whole sugya about a flower pot over there, then the plant inside the pot gets nourishment from the soil, from the soil outside it through that hole. But Shain and Nokov Loi, but if it doesn't have a hole, why, then no. So I might, based on the logic that you just said, that if you lent him a place for a stove or a range or whatever, for a stove or an oven or whatever, it works. Why not? Even if the flower pot doesn't have a hole, you still have the place where the flower pot is sitting. That should be considered karka for this purpose. And the answer is loyt sricha de manach asiki. The answer is you're right, but the chiddush would be when Hillel was talking about in his braisa, using a flower pot means even if the flower pot is only sitting on top of pegs. So it's on top of pegs. So it's not directly on the ground. Then nevertheless, you can still write the prusbol based on it, because after all, the flower pot does have dirt in it. And to that extent, we consider it to be, so as long as it has a hole, to that extent, we consider it attached to the ground. So the ground itself doesn't belong to him. All he has is the place where the pegs are. So therefore, it depends whether it has a hole or not. You're going to say, so one second, what about the place of the pegs themselves? Doesn't that count? So there you have a couple of different explanations that Rishonim give. One is that the Ramban says that's true, but nevertheless, the space where the pegs are on the ground is really not significant enough to be considered that you can write a prusbol on that basis. Other Rishonim disagree with the Ramban on that, and they say, what do you mean? We just said any amount, kol shehu. So the Rashba gives a different explanation. It means, let's say, that the even the pegs themselves don't belong to the loiver who owns the flower pot. They themselves belong to the person who owns the land underneath them. So therefore, really, the person who owns the flower pot has nothing in the karka itself. He hasn't rented the karka. He hasn't rented or borrowed the karka. He hasn't rented or borrowed the pegs. All he has is the flower pot itself. So nevertheless, we're saying if the flower pot has a hole, then that's good enough. By the way, the Rambam mentions in this connection, he says that there were some of the Gaonim who said, maybe you don't need any of that. Every Yid has a share of four Amos in Eretz Yisrael, so therefore there were people who argued you could use that as a basis for writing the Prozbul on the basis of the four Amos in Eretz Yisrael that he owns. The Rambam disagrees with that, and he says, come on, I mean, first of all, it's not like you know where those four Amos are. Second of all, what if the person is descended from Gerim, for example? Then he doesn't have a portion in Eretz Yisrael at all. So it's a nice drosha to say that every Yid has four Amos in Eretz Yisrael, but to say it practically as far as this din of Shemitah's Ksachim and to use it as a basis for writing the Prozbul, the Rambam says, no, it would in fact have to be that the person owns actual land based on can be any of the things we're talking about over here, but it can't just be that you're basing it on some nebulous four amos that he has in Eretz Yisrael. All right, the Gemara goes on. Rav Ashi makne le gidma de dikla. Rav Ashi would be makne to the loiva when he had a loan that he didn't want canceled by Shmita and he wanted the Prozbul. So he would be makne to the loiva, a stump of a palm tree, the cost of a Prozbul, and then he would write a Prozbul on that basis. Because even though the stump is, even though the stump is not karka itself, but it's attached to the karka, and therefore that's considered good enough. Rabbanan Dvei Rav Ashi Masu Milayu Lahadodi, the Chachamim of Yeshiva of Rav Ashi, instead of writing out a Prozbul, they would just say the words of the Prozbul verbally to one another, like we do nowadays. Rav Yonasan Masa Milu L'Rabchir Ba'aba, and similarly Rav Yonasan would say the words and then give over verbally the loans to Rabchir Ba'aba and his basement. And he asked Rav Chiya Ba'aba, do I need anything else beyond that? He says, you don't need. Now, here you have different Rishonim discussed. Is that because we're following Rav Nachman, who we learned yesterday? So yesterday we said that Shmuel had said that you can only write a Prozbul only in a great basin of Sura or Nahadah. So these Chachamim are apparently not agreeing with that. But anyway, one way of understanding is that they're following Rav Nachman's view that we said yesterday. He says, I would have liked to even strengthen the Takana of Prozbul and make it that even without writing a shtar, it should still be valid. So are these Chachamim basing themselves on that? Or maybe is this a special Takana that we're saying, that we're saying for Talmud Chachamim because they know the dinim and they know the concept of Prozbul, whereas for the Hamoin Am, maybe not necessarily. So there's different understandings among Rishonim about that. Then we learn in a Braisa, suppose the loiva does not have land, but suppose that there was an oriv for the loan, a guarantor, and he has land. Now one thing is that in halacha, unlike the Gemara mentions in Goyish law in those days, a person would have been allowed to, the malva would be able to go and collect first from the oriv. He wouldn't first have to go to the loiva to borrow the money. But in halacha, it's not like that. You have to go to the loiva first. But nevertheless, since you could conceivably collect the debt from the oriv, then that's a valid enough reason to write the Prozbul because the oriv has karka. loyal orev ein lahan karka. What if neither the loyva nor the orev has karka? Ulachayev lo yesh le karka. But suppose you have somebody else who's chayev a debt to one of them and he has karka. Also kois another prusbul. You can also use that to write a prusbul. Midir of Nothan, and then in that case, we're basing ourselves on Rav Nothan's din, that in a certain sense, the land can already be considered to belong to him. The Tanya Rav Nothan, this is the famous Shibuda de Rav Nothan. How do we know that if Ruvain is owed money by Shimon, and Shimon in turn is owed money by Levi, how do we know that when it comes time for repayment, we take directly from Levi and give it to Ruvain, and Levi can't say to Ruvain, I have nothing to do with you, I'm paying only Shimon. Therefore, the pasuk says he should give it to the one to whom he's guilty, or to the one to whom he owes the money. So therefore, we see, in other words, that it goes to the one. So we see that it can go like that. Shibuda did of nothing. It can go direct from one person to another without having to go through Shimon at all. So in the same sense over here, therefore, when you have if none of the parties to the loan have karka, but the orev, for example, has previously lent somebody else money, and that somebody else has karka, conceivably that karka could end up being taken to satisfy the debt, and therefore in that sense it can be considered as though even now it belongs to the loiva, and therefore you can use it as a basis for writing a prusbul. Okay. More on the topic of prusbul. Tnanhos, and we learn another Mishnah in Shavuos over there. And this is another example of what the Gemara will often do, what the Bavli will often do in particular, when you have a Mishnayos from Zeroyim or Taris that the Gemara wants to analyze, then often it'll continue analyzing them even though they're not directly related to the Masechta that we're dealing with, because there's no Gemara Bavli on Shavuos, so therefore this is the only opportunity to discuss it, so therefore the Gemara will take the opportunity to discuss these Mishnayos and analyze them, because there's not going to be another place to do it. So, Tnanhos, Mashvius Mishamet, Samilva, Bain Bishtar, Ben Shaloy Bishtar. So the Mishnah says over there that Shemitah cancels the debt, whether there's a shtar or whether there's not a shtar. So Rav and Shmuel de Amitavayu. Now Rav and Shmuel both explain, what does the Mishnah mean? Bishtar and Shaloy Bishtar. It means exactly that. Vishtar means shtar sheyesh b'achrayus nechosim. The word shtar in this Mishnah means the regular kind where there is achrayus nechosim, where it says on it that all of the loiva's property is meshubad to the loan. Shaloi vishtar would be she'en b'achrayus nechosim. And shaloi vishtar would mean there is a shtar, but there's no achrayus nechosim. So then both of those shmita will cancel them if there's no prusbul. But kolshken milval peh, how much more so kolshken milval peh, how much more so a milval peh is going to be cancelled by shmita because there's no document at all. On the other hand, Rav Yochanan and Rish Lakish understand the Mishnah differently. They say the shtar means shtar she'en b'achrayus. The shtar of the Mishnah means where there's no achrayus, she'en b'achrayus nachosim. Shaloi b'shtar means milval peh, means where there's no shtar at all. Avol, but Rav Yochanan and Rish Lakish learn shtar she'yesh b'achrayus nachosim, when the shtar to begin with has written in it that the loiva says, I'm taking responsibility that any property of mine you can use to satisfy the debt, there's a shibud on my karka, then they say Eina Meshamet, then to begin with Shmita doesn't cancel such a debt, so there's really no need even for a prusbul in that case. The Gemara says Tanya Kavaseh of Yochanan and Rav Shimon Lakish. So now we learn a brisa. So we learn a brisa like Rav Yochanan and Rish Lakish's understanding that in fact where there is a where there is a where there is a shtar with achrayus nechosim, the which is the regular kind of shtar for a loan. It says that I'm lending you money, and you're lending me money, and all of the character, all of the real estate that I have is meshubed to the loan. So Rav Yochanan and Rish Lakish are learning that such a thing is not meshamet. So the Gemara says, Tanya Kavasei, the Rav Yochanan and Rav Shimon Lakish. So there is a braisa that follows them. It says shtar choyv meshamet. Even if there's a loan document, then still meshamet. If there's no prusval, v'im yesh be'achrayus nechosim, ain't meshamet. But if there's achrayus nechosim, then it's not meshamet. So then, so that braisa agrees with Rav Yochanan and Rish Lakish's understanding. The Gemara says Tanya Idoch. Now we learn in a different braisa that's also relevant to this. If he defined for him one particular field that the debt should be paid off with, then that loan is not cancelled by Shemitah. And even if he writes, he doesn't mention a particular field, but he says generically all of my nechosim are under achrayus and under an arevus to you, ain't a meshamet. Then also the second braisa says that's not meshamet either, because the point is once there's karka and once there's achrayus nechosim involved, in effect the loan can, in a certain sense, can be considered already paid off, because the karka is available at all time to be paid off, and therefore that can work. So the Gemara continues. There was a relative of Rav Asi once who had like that. He had a shtar. He had a shtar choy for a debt that he had lent out money, and it said in an achrayus nechosim. Also, kamei Rav Asi. So he came to Rav Asi, his relative, to ask what's the din. He asks him, well, is this loan canceled by shmita or not? Do I have to make a prusval or not? Amalei ain't a meshamet. So Rav Asi tells him it's not meshamet. The loan is not canceled by that. Because following Rav Yechanan's opinion, he left Rav Asi. He went to Rav Yechanan. Amalei meshamet. And Rav Yechanan tells him it is meshamet. Now that seems to be the opposite of what Rabbi Yochanan just said. We just said if there's achrayus nechosim, then Rabbi Yochanan says it's not meshamet. He was saying it is meshamet. So why it is, by the way, Rashi makes a point of mentioning that this guy was the malva, this relative of Rav Asi. Why once he got a statement from Rav Asi, ain't a meshamet, why he went to ask Rabbi Yochanan again instead of just saying, okay, good, then I'll just be able to collect after Shemitah without needing approval. We don't know. The Gemara doesn't say why he did that. Maybe he wanted to make sure maybe he might have been a Talmud Chacham and he wants to actually know the din. Maybe it was. He wanted to make sure that when he goes after Shmita to collect the debt, and the loiva might say, "What do you mean? I hold by a different opinion that says that it is meshamet." So maybe he wanted to make sure that it's ironclad. So the point is, so now we have not only are Rav Asi and Rav Yochanan contradicting one another, but Rav Yochanan seems to have contradicted himself. So also Rav Asi became Rav Yochanan. So Rav Asi comes to Rav Yochanan to ask what's going on. Omalei, he asks him in this kind of din, meshamet or ain't meshamet? Does it cancel the debt or not? Omalei meshamet. Rav Yochanan tells him it does. So he asks, well, ma'ahu da'omer ain't meshamet? Rebbe, didn't you yourself say that it's not meshamet? Omalei, so Rav Yochanan answers him with an expression that we had earlier in the Masechta as well. Just because we imagine that it's that it seems to be that this should be the din, we didn't explicitly hear it from our Rebbeim. Nasa Maisa, should we do it in practice? I hold that it seems that's how it should be, because there's karka involved, then therefore the loan should not be canceled by Shmita. But I'm not going to necessarily pass it in that way in practice. We can't be sure. So he says, Amalei Valtani Kavasei Demar. What about the Braisa that supports what you said? Amalei, so Rabbi Yochanan tells him, even that, Dilma'ahi b'shamayi, even then, that b'raisa might be only like b'shamayi, the Ami shtar o'imit ligwis, to gavu yomli, they say, when you have a shtar that's ready to be collected, as in this case, again, where there's already land, there's land available, and therefore the debt in principle could be collected right now from that land, then therefore, so, and Beshamai holds, could govui dummy for certain purposes and halacha, certain thing is considered as though it's already collected, so therefore maybe that brisa goes according to that, not necessarily would Beshamai agree with that, therefore not necessarily is the halacha like that. So in the end, it comes out not like Rabbi Yochanan's opinion before, that ain't a mishamet, rather the halacha ends up being that mishamet. With the exception of the second braisa that says, siyim lo soda achas v'alva ose, ain't a mishamet, that if he mentioned one particular field, then it's not mishamet. If he just says in general, achrayus nechosim, then it would be mishamet. But if he mentions a particular field, then not. Next. Tanan Hossam. Now we learn in another Mishnah, again in that Perek in Shavius, dealing with these dinim of loans during Shemitah. The Mishnah says, Hamalbas Chaver Mois on a Mashkin. If a person lends somebody else money on a Mashkin, Bahamos Shtarois of the Beis Din, or if he hands over his Shtaris to Beis Din to collect on his behalf, ain mashamtin, then it's not mashamit, then the loan is not cancelled by Shemitah. This is, we talked about yesterday, that is the basis of the prusbel. So again, you had Rashi learnt over there that it means that midaraisa, in fact, that would not work. The whole takana of Hillel is to make that sort of thing works. According to Tosfos and other Rishonim, the vote is midaraisa, that would work, but midaraisa, you'd have to give them the physical shtaris, whereas Hillel's takana is that you don't need to do that, or even that Hillel's takana was to make a prusbel on a regular basis rather than just on a once in a lifetime basis if you need it. Anyway, so the Gemara says Bishlema Moisa shtaris of a Beis Din. Okay, so I understand why if he gives over his shtaris to Beis Din, why the loan is not canceled. The Tafsilahu Beis Din, because now Beis Din has the hold of those shtaris. And since Hefker based in Hefker, then therefore they have the ability to collect the debt. So therefore, so you can't, the whole point is the Torah is saying the Malva is not allowed to demand repayment of the loan. Well, here, he's not the one demanding repayment based in. So therefore, so that would be a good reason. El a Malva ala Mashkin my timer. But if you lent him money on a Mashkin, why would we say Schmitter wouldn't cancel that debt? The answer is Omar Rama Mishum to Tophasley, because the fact is the Malva has the Mashkin in his possession. So therefore he's not demanding repayment of the debt. So therefore there's no law you go. He's not being over on the issue of trying to collect the debt. Tosfos in fact refers to something in Sifri on the Pasuk that when it's already Shelachicha B'yadcha, when what belongs to your fellow Yid is in your hands, then the whole concept of Shemitah Sufim does not apply to that. Omalei Abayas, Abayas is by that logic, Elamei Ata, Til Vohu V'dor B'chatzei, right? What if the Malva lent the Loiva money, and the Malva is living in the Chotzer of the Loiva, the Tophisle, so he also has possession of a piece of a, he has possession of a piece of land that belongs to the Loiva. Are you telling me such a loan would not be cancelled by Shemitah? Of course it is. Now the idea of the Malva living in the Loiva's chotzer, they have to do it in a way, they have to be careful to do it in a way that it won't be over on the issue of ribbis. You can't have, for example, that he lives there for free, because then in effect it would be that the loiva is giving him something extra for having lent him money. So it can be either that he's paying rent, or in Bava Metzia it talks about something called a mashkanta desura, where over time the loan is paid off with the rent that would have had to have been paid. Whatever the case, the point is, certainly, though, such a loan is canceled by Shemitah. So what's the difference if it's just a matter of the Malva having possession of something that belongs to the Loiva? So Rava answers him, no. Shiny Mashkin, the reason of a Mashkin of Metalplin is something different. Because the Malva actually is considered to own that Mashkin based on a statement of Rabbi Yitzchak. Rabbi Yitzchak says, how do we know that the Baal Choyv acquires the Mashkin to a certain extent, to the extent that Rashi says that if it gets lost, then he's chayav b'achuyasei, he's responsible to pay it back or to deduct it from the debt, as the case may be. The pasuk says you have the mitzvah of returning the mashkin if the loiva is poor. You have to return the mashkin every day if it's something that he uses by day, every night if it's something that he uses by night, whatever. And the pasuk says when you do that, for you it will be considered tzedakah. So im eina koina tzedakah b'nai. Now how can we call it tzedakah if he doesn't actually own the mikan the baal chayv shekoina mashkin? From here we see the baal chayv is considered to actually own the mashkin to some extent. And therefore, and therefore, that can be considered enough ownership that therefore the there's no real collection of the debt because it's considered already collected. But not when it's karka, not when he's renting karka from him to live in. Then that's different. That's not really a mashkin. So then he doesn't have the ability to collect from that particular piece of land. So therefore you can't call it that. Therefore you can't call it that the debt is already considered collected. Tosfos discusses over here the point when we say a mashkin over here, we know there are two times, two different scenarios where a mashkin can be taken. To begin with, when the money is borrowed, or later on when the guy's not paying up, and you take a mashkin from him to secure the debt. So which one are we talking about over here? On the face of it, we're talking about over here where the mashkin was taken at the time of the loan, whereas Rabbi Yitzchak's din seems to be the kind that you're talking about later on when the guy doesn't want to pay. Then you the Torah says you can't go into his house to take something. You have to a shriach. Basin has to go, and the loiva himself or you yourself stand outdoors, and the loiva brings you something, or shliach basin can go in if necessary. But whatever the case, Tosfos discusses in some detail about that, what kind of mashkin are we talking about over here? Does Rabbi Yitzchak's din maybe apply even to both kinds of mashkin and so forth? Okay. Continues the Gemara. Tnanah. So now we learn another Mishnah over there, again in that Perek of Shlius. Hamachzu choyv l'chaveir b'shlius. When a person returns a debt, when a person pays back a debt to somebody else in Shemitah. And by the way, when we say over here, where Rashi explains, b'shlius doesn't mean during Shemitah, because the loan itself is actually canceled only at the end of Shemitah. What we mean is that when we say b'shlius means during the time when Shemitah is in effect. With that said, there are Rishonim who learn that already from the beginning of the year, you're not allowed to demand repayment of the debt. It's not actually canceled until the end of the year, but already from the beginning of the year, you're not allowed to demand repayment. So this word bashvius could mean more straightforwardly according to that. And in fact, that is why Armin Valtadeva brings this in Shulchan Aruch, and that is why Armin is in fact to do a frusbal right before Shemitah and at the end of Shemitah, and that way we're covering all our bases. Anyway, the Mishnah says, the Malva has to say, if there was no crucible, of course, I am forgiving the debt. The Omaloi, if the Loiva says, nevertheless, I want you to accept this payment, then he's allowed to take it from him. Because the Pasuk says, this is the word of the Shemitah, so you have to say the word of Shemitah, to say Meshamet Ani, but once you do that, then you're allowed to collect the payment. So Omar Rabba, the Toli Le Abdu Omar Hochi. So Rabba says, or Rava, it says on the side over here, says, you're allowed to Toli Le until he says that. Now, what is Toli Le? Literally, Toli means to hang. So Rashi says that actually means that the Malva at this point is allowed to force the Loiva to say, Afa Pikain, I want to pay you back. So literally, Rashi says, Yitlenu Al Eitz, you can actually hang him up on a tree if necessary in order to get him to say that. Which then they're showing him ask. I mean, in that case, then you've completely taken away the whole concept of Shemitah Ksafim. Then how does that concept ever work? And so there's an explanation that a number of Tosfos Reed gives it over here. The Terumas Hadeshin mentions such a point. The Bach brings it in his name that what we're talking about is once the Malva has said Meshamet Ani, then we can go from there and we can take these steps of even going to the extent of hanging the guy on a tree. But he first has to be able to say Meshamet Ani in order to accomplish the mitzvah of Shemitah. If not, then no, he can't force repayment of the debt until he does that. Well, on the other hand, the Meiri over here says it doesn't literally mean hanging him. It just means, like, pressuring him, like, giving him guilt trip. You start telling him, like, I lent you money because I'm such a good guy and you needed the money so badly. And really, I want the debt back. I know that Shemitah has canceled it, et cetera, et cetera. And you guilt trip him into saying, I'll give it. A number of other Rishonim, though, understand that the word tolilei over here doesn't mean to hang him. Rather, it means to hang something else. So it can mean, like, to hang your eyes in expectation of him. So, like, you give him a look, like, you know, I really need that money. And hopefully the guy will get the hint. It can mean even, some of the Rishonim say, means literally you can be hanging out your hand, sticking out your hand. You say meshamet ani, and meanwhile you've got your hands stretched out to say nu. So even though, so your mouth is saying one thing, but your hand is saying something else, that's also valid. So the Gemara says, Eisvei, so that's what Rabba says. Eisvei Abaya. So Abaya asks him, what do you mean? Braisa says, when the loiva is paying back the loan after Shemitah, if he shouldn't say, I'm doing it to pay off your debt. Ella Yoimaloi, he has to tell him, Shalihain, it's my money, of Matana, and I'm just giving it to you as a present. So how do you can't force a person or pressure a person into giving a present. Omalei, so Rabbi says, still, that's what it means. Tolilei, nami abdo amahachi. Yeah, he can be tolilei him until he says that. Hang him on a tree, or pressure him in the various ways that we just talked about. Yeah. In other words, exactly that. Even, so you've told him meshamatani. Now you take steps to make him say, matonani nosimacha, even if the guy is insisting, no, I won't. So now you have a few possibilities. Once you said meshamatani bach, the guy might say, okay, in that case, Zaymich Gesund, I'm going. So that would be when Tolilei, to get him to say something different, however you define Tolilei, according to the different Rishonim that we just said. Now, if the guy says, okay, I'll pay you back your loan. So now you say, that's no good. You can't say you're paying back the loan. Say that you're giving it to me as a gift. And you work things until you get him to do that. So the Gemara tells a case in this connection. Abba Bar Marta, who Abba Bar Manyumi, he went by two names. It's possible maybe Marta was his mother's name and Manyumi was his father's name. It's also possible, since we're going to have in the story over here, that he had to borrow money and couldn't pay it back. Maybe he had to change his name at times so people wouldn't find him. Whatever. Anyway, Abba Masikle, Rabba Zuzi, Rabba was owed money by him. He had previously borrowed money from Rabba. Aisino Niyalei Bashvias, so he brought it to Rabba to pay off the debt after Shmita. So Rabbi tells him, the debt, I've forgiven the debt. Apparently Rabbi had not had a proposal done. So Shaklin of Ozel. So Abba Manyumi took the money and left. So Abaya Ashkechei to have Osi. Abaya came and found that Rabbi was upset. Omale Amai Osi Mahas. He asked, what's the matter? Why are you sad? Omale Hochi Abimaisa. So Rabbi tells him what happened. So Abaya went to find Abba Bar Manyumi, Abba Bar Marta, whatever. Omalei, he asked him, Amtisle Zuzi Lamar, did you bring the money to my Rebbe, to Rabba? Omalei, yeah. Omalei, my Omalok. So Abaya asked him, so what did he tell you? Omalei, Meshamet Ani. He said, I'm Meshamet, I'm forgiving the loan. Omalei, so Abaya asked him, Ba'amret Le Acha Pikein, did you tell him Acha Pikein, nevertheless, I want to pay back the loan? Omalei, Loi. So Abba says, no, I didn't do that. Which, by the way, the Mishnah mentions at the end of the Perek over there, it says that when a person does do that, when he does return the loan, Ruach Chachamim Noichahemenu, the Chachamim are happy with such a person that he's acting in the right way. And if he doesn't, in fact, then there's something held against him. The Torah does give the ability to have loans forgiven on Shemitah, but nevertheless, a person shouldn't take advantage of it. So in effect, that's what Abaya is saying to him. So Omalei, so Abaya says, Vi'i Amitlei, you should know, if you had told him that Apa Pikain, have a shaklun minach, then he would have taken the money from you. Hashtabias, so at least now that you didn't say that, go make it up now. Amtinu niale, go bring the money, the Amale, Apa Pikain, and tell him Apa Pikain, I want to pay off the debt. Don't just take advantage of him. The fact that you see that Rabba is upset about it, then sure enough, also Amtinu niale. He went and brought it to him, but Amale Apa Pikain, shaklunu minay, and now Rabba is able to take the money. Omer, and Rabba says at the end of the story, this young Talmud Chacham, Abba Bar Marta, didn't have the seichel, didn't have the das in the first place to say this. He should have realized right away that you say it without Abaya having to tell him that this is the right thing to do. There is a very interesting vote on this from a Tzadik Akoyin of Lublin. He says that Rabbah should be upset over some money that he lost, since when somebody like Rabbah. And he says the vote is, Rabbah realized the very fact that he's upset over it means he being on a high level, he being on a level of a tzaddik, that if he's upset over it, it means he has a shaychus to that money. It means that money really is necessary for his avodah. So therefore, now that he realizes, Adarabah, from that itself, he realizes the halacha is, this is how it's supposed to be done, and therefore, when Abba actually came back and said, and said the nusach, and gave him the money, then that put him at ease, because now Itaka has what is supposed to be coming to him, what is necessary for him, for his neshama. Some of Tzadik Amonim from Mona Chav Malayim in general, but particularly still, to the extent that he should be otsu over it, to the extent that he should be sad, he says that that's the vote. In other words, is he did that because he realized that something essential to his avoida is missing now. Okay. The Gemara finishes off more dinim with pruzbol. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav Nachman, neman adam loyma pruzbol haya biyadi va'avad. A malva is believed to say that I had a pruzbol and I va'avad mimeni and I lost it. So he comes after Shemitah to demand the debt. The loyva says, "Where's your pruzbol?" We would believe him to say that he had one and he lost it. My timer, why is that? Given to Takinun Abonim Pruzbol, once the Chachamim made the Takana to write a Pruzbol, or to even say a Pruzbol, as the case may be, Loy Shovik Hater of Ochel Isura. We wouldn't say, a person wouldn't set aside the Heter and go deliberately eat something that's Osir. In other words, it would have been very easy to execute a Pruzbol, and therefore to be able to collect the debt. We're not going to assume that he's going to collect it against Halacha, we're going to assume that he tried to follow Halacha. Tosfos says that, in fact, for that reason, we would believe him even without a shvuah. He didn't even have to swear that he had a pruzbol, just to say would be enough. Other Rishonim disagree with that and say, based in will make him take a shvuah, but at least that would be an acceptable argument. So for that matter, the Gemara says, ki osu l'kameh de Rav, when a malva and a loiva would come before Rav, after Shemitah, omalei, so Rav would initiate, would, even if the malva didn't say, I have a pruzbol, Rav would actually ask him, midi pruzbol hoy l'cha v'avad, did you have a pruzbol and then you lost it? And that's fine, because then it's a psnach picha le'ilam, who, that is considered an example, what the Pasuk says, open up your mouth for the mute, meaning sometimes you have a person in Beis Din just doesn't know what argument to make, and Beis Din is allowed to prompt him and help him come up with the appropriate argument. They have to be careful, like doesn't tell the others. I'll pass that's machok urcha adayanim. They can't be like lawyers who are being his mouthpiece, but they can. They can help him bring up an argument that he might not have thought of, and this would be an example of that. He doesn't know the din that he thought he lost the prusbol, and therefore that's it. The whole thing is forfeited, so Beis Din is allowed to remind him that actually that's not so. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah in Ksuvus. First it talks about over there about a woman who brings out a get, but she doesn't have a ksuba with it. And the question is, was her ksuba paid off already? So now continues the Mishnah. The same way if a Baal Chayv brings out a shtar chayv, the enim prusbol, and he doesn't have a prusbol with it, how do you lo yiparu? Then he can't be paid back the debt. So that means once, if the prusbol is lost, it's lost. The answer is, the Gemara says, you're right, Tanoi. It's actually Machlokas Tanoim, the Tanya, because there's a braisa that says, Hamotzi Shtar Choyv Tzorich Shihayim a Pruzbol. You bring out a Shtar Choyv, you have to have a Pruzbol. V'chomim Enich Tzorich. V'chom say you don't need, we believe you to say that you had one and you lost it. So therefore, Rav's Psak Din is following that. And that, in fact, is the Halacha. Okay. So now that we're done with Pruzbol, so we've been talking about the last few Mishnayos, have been dealing with things that are Mpnei Tikkun HaOlam, various takonis that Chacham made in order to make the world, in order to make society function better. So now, the next couple of Mishnayos, I'm going to talk about Dinim involving an Eved Knani. Our Mishnah itself is not going to mention the concept of Tikkun HaOlam, but the next Mishnah, which in the printed Mishnayos is all part of the same Mishnah, does mention that they took an olam, so that would be the connection with our paragraph. We're continuing with things that are Mpnei Tikkun HaOlam. The Mishnah says, Eved Shenishva, if an Eved Knani was taken captive by robbers, by kidnappers or whatever, Upda'uhu, and somebody else, some other Jews, went and redeemed that Eved Knani from captivity. So it depends. In Lashum Eved, if they bore him having in mind to use him as an Eved, Yishtabed, then he's allowed to use him as an Eved. In Lashum Ben Chorin, Lo Yishtabed, and if he bore him as a free person, then he can't make him work. Instead, the Eved goes free. Reb Shimon Gamliel, I'm a Benkach or Benkach, Yishtabed. Reb Shimon Gamliel says, either way, he can be enslaved. So now the Gemara is going to discuss what the case is. When we say he can be enslaved or he goes free, who are we talking about? The second, the buyer can use him as an Eved. What happens to the original owner? Does it mean he goes free again? Why should we take away the original owner's rights? What does Reb Shimon Gamliel mean? He says, Ben Kach or Ben Kach Yishtabed. So what does all that mean? So the Gemara asks, the Maya Skinen, what is the scenario? Ilema Lifnei Yush. Do we mean that the second person bought the Eved before the first owner had Yirush on the Eved? So he didn't yet give up hope of getting his Eved back. So, Lashum Ben Chorin, Amai Lo Yishtabed. So why, if the second person bought him, having in mind that he's a Ben Chorin, why should he not be able, why should he go free? He still belongs to his first, he still belongs to the original master, the first one has not yet had Yush, so therefore the Eved still fully belongs to him. El la'acha Yush, so evidently we have to be talking this after Yush. Well then, l'shum Eved amai Yishtabed. Well then, if the first owner was miyayish from him, then why, even if he was bought as an Eved, why should he be mishubed at this point? The Gemara assumes that it means mishishtabed would be to the original master. Well, why? The original master had Yush on him. So what's going on? So Amar Abaye la'olam lifnei Yush. So Abaye says, in fact, we are after all talking about it was before Yush. What it means is, l'shum eved yishtabed l'rabbi Yushin. It means that if he was bought by the other person from the captors as an eved. When you say yishtabed, when the Mishnah said yishtabed, doesn't mean the second person gets to use him as an eved. It means yishtabed l'rabbi Yushin. It means he goes back and continues being an eved to his original master because the original master didn't have Yush on it. The second one, bought him intending to use it as an Eved, since he knows that the first one didn't have Yush yet, so therefore he knows that he's ineffective to do that would be stealing from him. So fine, he's entitled to go to the first one and get reimbursed for what he laid out to pay for this Eved, but he's not allowed to keep him as an Eved unless, of course, the first one wants to sell him to him. Then the Mishnah would continue, Lashum Ben Chorin, but if he bought him as a Ben Chorin, Lo Yishtabed, then the Mishnah, when it says Lo Yishtabed, means Lo L'Rabbi Yishin V'Lo L'Rabbi Sheni, neither to the original master nor to the new master who was paid to him. Why? L'Rabbi Sheni Loi, not to, he can't be made to work for, he can't be made to work for the second one, Dar L'Shum Ben Chorin Parke, because after all, he bought him having in mind that he is a Ben Chorin, so he certainly never bought him intending to use him as an Eved. L'Rabbi Yishin Nami Loi, and Abaye is explaining, the Tanakhama and the Mishnah is saying that even the first master is not able in that case to use him as an Eved anymore. Duma mimni evaloid parki, because otherwise people might hold back and not bother redeeming Avadim. If an Eved is captured, they may figure, even if I buy him to be free, he's still going to go back to being a slave to his original owner. So therefore, that would be a reason why to make him a Ben Chorin. Now another person has an incentive to buy him. Now you'll buy him and you'll make a full-fledged Yid out of him. So that would be, Abaye says, that's the kind of Kama's Svara. And then Reb Shimon Gamliel would argue and say, Ben Kach, Ben Kach, Yishtabed. Either way, he goes back to being an Eved, to the original master. Kasaba, because he holds, no problem. Kashem Shem Mitzvah Liptis is Bnei Chorin, Kach Mitzvah Liptis is Avadim. Just as much as there's a Mitzvah to redeem Bnei Chorin, regular free Jews, from captivity, the same way Avadim. So therefore, there's no matter of incentive like this. In other words, Abaye is understanding, the Tanakhama would say, there's only a Mitzvah to redeem Bnei Chorin, not to redeem Avadim. So if you know the guy's going to remain an Eved, you're going to say, well, why should I bother being paid to him? I'm not accomplishing a mitzvah with that. So therefore, we're saying that instead he goes out and becomes a Ben Chorin. But now, Reb Shimon Gamliel is saying, no, there's no such thing. Anyway, there was a mitzvah to be paid to Avadim, who fell into the hands of Goyim as well. So therefore, by all means, let him stay in Eved. That won't disincentivize anybody from freeing him because they know they're still accomplishing a mitzvah. So that would be one way of explaining the Mishnah, of explaining the different opinions in the Mishnah. Rava amar la'olam la'acha Yush. Rava says no. So Abaye's answer was that we're all talking before Yush. So he still belongs to the original master. And the only question is, do we want to incentivize or disincentivize people from freeing avadim? Rava says instead we can say that the Mishnah is talking about after the master, after the original master gave up hope of ever getting this Eved back. So now, when it says L'shum Eved, when it says the second one bought him as an Eved, means Yishtavet L'rabbe Shaden. So now he's in the second one, is entitled to use him as an Eved. The first one was Miyayish, so therefore it's like any other lost object that now you're able to keep for yourself. Lashum ben Choren, on the other hand, if the second one bought him, having in mind that he's a ben Choren, lo yishtab lo l'rabbe rishon lo l'rabbe sheni, then he doesn't work for either one. L'rabbe sheni lo yidohol lashum ben Choren parte. The second one can't change his mind and use him as an Eved, because he redeemed him having in mind that he's a ben Choren. L'rabbe rishon nami lo yidohol achar yishtab. And he wouldn't have to work for the first one, because it's after Yish, and therefore the first one doesn't own him anymore. So therefore the Tanakhama would say, regardless how you look at it, he's a free person. Reb Shimon Gamliel, on the other hand, then Reb Shimon Gamliel would say, Ben Kach, he's shtabed. Either way, he still goes back and works for his first master, the Chizkiah. And that would be like the way Chizkiah explains it. Why does Reb Shimon Gamliel say that either way he goes back to being an Eved? Because you don't want that every Eved Kanani is going to go and take himself off, Yakal Atzma, that means to make himself fall, but whatever, Gayosis means armed troops. In other words, an Eved, if you say that just being captured or taken by Goyim is enough to make it, that he's not an Eved anymore, then every Eved might go and join the army, Omafki Atzma, Miyad Rabba, and that way make himself that now he no longer belongs to his master. So in order to avoid that, we don't want to give the Eved an incentive to run away and join the army, or join Gayosis can also mean like troops of armed bandits or whatever, rather than remaining an Eved as he should. So therefore, we don't want to say that it should be that easy for him to become free. So that would explain Reb Shimon Gamliel's reason appointed at Sparta. So the Gemara says Meisvi. The Gemara says have a contradiction on that though. A Braisa says Omra Lahen Reb Shimon Gamliel. So Reb Shimon Gamliel says to the Chachamim, you're telling me that he should that in certain cases he becomes a Ben Chorin, So Reb Shimon Gamliel said to them, no, Kishem Shem Mitzvah Liftus is B'nei Chorin, Kach Mitzvah Liftus is Avodim. Just as much as there's a mitzvah to redeem free Jews, so there's a, similarly, there's a mitzvah to redeem Avodim. So the Braisa clearly says, that's Reb Shimon Gamliel's Svara. B'shleim ala Abaya v'am alifnei Yush. So according to Abaya, who says that the whole case is before Yush, behind it to come a Kishem, then that explains what Reb Shimon Gamliel is saying. He's saying to the Chachamim, you think that if the guy stays in Eved, nobody's going to want to buy him because they figure they're not accomplishing a mitzvah by that anyway. No, they are in fact fulfilling a mitzvah of Pidyon Shvuyim by redeeming an Eved as well. But according to Rava, who says the whole Svara is after Yush, so it has nothing to do with whether you're accomplishing the mitzvah of Pidyon Shvuyim or not. It's just a matter of after Yush, the Tanakhama says he no longer belongs to his first master because he had Yush, and Reb Shimon Gamliel is saying that nevertheless he does belong to him. So then in that case, what's this argument? Kishem Shem Mitzvah Liftes. How does that answer anything? Hi to shame. What do you mean he's using the argument that it's a mitzvah to redeem either one? Mishum the Chizkiyu. It would be based on Chizkiyah's Svara. The answer is Amalach Rava. The answer is Rava can explain the Braisa. Reb Shimon Gamliel lo have a yelder my Tami Rabbanim. Reb Shimon Gamliel himself did not understand why the Chachamim are saying that he would, that in some cases he goes free. Bahaki Kamala, who's telling them like this, I don't know whether you're not just why you're saying, but what's the scenario you're talking about. When you're saying that the second one in some cases can keep him as an Evan, in some cases he goes free, are you talking about Elif Ne Yush Kamritu? He says to them, Elif Ne Yush Kamritu, if you're telling me if the scenario you're referring to is before Yush, so he still belongs to the first master, Hainu Kashem. So then I'll bring you the point that there is a mitzvah of Pidyon Shvuyim on Avodim as well. So don't think that if the guy remains an Eved, nobody's going to want to bother being paid to him. They're going to know they're still accomplishing a mitzvah by that, and he returns to the first owner. And if you're talking about after Yush, so then that consideration doesn't apply because he's not going to belong to the first master. Nevertheless, then I'll tell you Chizkiah's reason which is we don't want to give the Evan an excuse to say I'll go join the army or I'll go join the bandits and that way I'll be free. So therefore, as much as possible, we want to have that he should remain an Evan even after all this happens. So therefore, so we can say, so the Braisa is not contradicting the other, because in the Braisa, Rav Shimon Gamliel is mentioning one of two possibilities that the Chachamim might be basing, one of two possibilities of what the case is that the Chachamim are talking about and saying what their din is. So we'll continue tomorrow. Baz Hashem. So Rava says, Tosfos points out, Rava says, nevertheless, it's more logical to say that the Mishnah is talking about la'achar yush rather than abayas lifnei yush. Even though Rav Shimon Gamliel himself is saying that really I would argue with you on both cases, but Rava finds it more logical to understand our Mishnah as talking about la'achar yush. So we'll continue this discussion tomorrow, Baz Hashem, and we'll talk a lot more about the dinim of avodim k'nanim in general.
Go ahead.